I think the challenge that we have is some of the therapies that are more curative or preventive in nature are often paid for by a single payer at a single moment in time, but then benefit somebody over a long period of time. And we may need to think about kind of national coverage parameters or reinsurance pools, right? Where everybody pays into a pool that helps pay out for those who use those. Because I think if not, we'll stifle, you know, some of the creativity, because, you know, a single insurer at a single point in time is not going to want to pay for, you know, a therapy that cures an infant that then accrues to the 25 other payers that infant.
And now, from San Francisco and the UCSF Rosenman Institute, the Health Technology Podcast with your host, Christine Winoto.
Our guest today is Ruth Christopolsky, the president of AN Health Solutions at Providence Health Systems. Ruth's expertise in transforming healthcare policies, business strategies, and technological integration is nothing short of groundbreaking. Her role at Providence Health Systems has been integral in steering the course towards innovative healthcare solutions, shaping a future where health and wellness are approached with cutting-edge strategies and deep compassion. Ruth's extensive experience and strategic insights have been instrumental in addressing some of the most challenging aspects of healthcare. Her leadership, marked by a deep understanding of the intricate dynamics of the industry, has led to significant advancement in managing healthcare costs and improving the quality of care through technology. In our conversation, we will uncover the nuances of Ruth's journey, her contribution to transforming healthcare with technology, and her vision for a future where healthcare is not only efficient and accessible, but also profoundly patient-centric. Here's our conversation. Well, thank you for joining us this morning, Ruth.
Thank you for having me, Christine. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, happy Friday. It's always good to have this conversation on Friday, and everybody have a long week and time for us to wind down a little bit and getting ready for the weekend. I always like to start with your personal journey. What shaped you? What got you interested to be in healthcare? Because everybody gets to healthcare so many different way. When did it click, like, this is the path, that the industry that I'm interested in, I want to stay with it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think my early exposure was through four of my grandfather's sisters, were nuns in the Catholic order, and three of the four of them were in healthcare. So as a very, very young child, as when we went to meet our great aunts and see our great aunts, we were typically going to some kind of healthcare entity because that's where they're at. So, I mean, I can remember, you know, going into the hospital and visiting with my great aunt, Sister Pauline, who was the executive in that particular facility way, way, way back. And for me, the only educated women and maybe the only educated individuals in my family, folks that went to college or to graduate school, were the sisters, right? And so outside of them, I was the first person to actually go to college in my family. And I was always really interested in doing something in that space because I saw what a sense of fulfillment they had from that particular mission. And of course, like almost every person in healthcare, I thought I wanted to be a doctor, right? I think that's how every young person enters, you know, either undergrad or graduate education, going, I want to go to medical school. But I found out really early in that the policy and business aspects of healthcare were actually quite more interesting to me than anatomy and physiology and all of those kind of things. And I started to like be really interested in why policy was driving certain things and then how payment was shaping how healthcare was delivered. And so, you know, kind of three quarters of the way through undergrad, went, I'd rather be on the policy side, and then went on to graduate school For finance and IT, which way back then were, one, not a lot of women in those spaces, and in the IT space was relatively new. So, you know, I, very, very lucky. I had this wonderful young man who I thought was old at the time because he was like 10 years older than me in grad school. You know, and when you're really young, you like look at somebody who's 30 and you go, oh, they're really old. No, I don't believe that anymore. But as we were getting ready to graduate, you know, back then there were a bunch of accounting firms that used to look for business school graduates. And I was talking to several of them and he pulled me aside and said, Ruth, I thought you wanted to do something specifically in healthcare. And I'm like, well, I do, but I don't know anyone. Well, his father actually ran an integrated delivery system early on in Pennsylvania. And so he introduced me to his father. And then I started a 2-year fellowship at that organization. And that kind of solidified. But it was almost, I feel like, accidental or kind of, I call it God-cidences. Like somebody had a bigger plan and pointed me in the right direction. And have enjoyed every minute, Christine, in healthcare since.
Isn't it interesting that how that moment in your life, that when you meet the person that can make you go left instead of right or vice versa, and you could have been, I don't know, working in a public accounting firm.
Right. Or in banking.
Or banking. So tell me more, like, what is that 2-year fellowship, what you learned from it, and how is that different from what you see healthcare is now?
Well, actually, it was a pretty progressive organization. And again, when everybody leaves, you know, either undergraduate or graduate work in healthcare back then, everybody thought the only opportunities there were in hospitals, right? Like you wanted to be a hospital administrator or run, you know, a hospital finance department. And this was a small integrated delivery system. They had a couple hospitals. They owned physician practices way back in the, you know, late 1980s, early 1990s. And they also had a health plan. And so I had the opportunity to spend, you know, 4 to 5 months kind of in each of those areas and then select, did I want to be in the clinic setting, the hospital setting, or the health plan setting for my last rotation. And I actually stayed on the health plan side because I was really fascinated by, you know, how health plan was, you know, how the health plan was helping figure out how to pay for the services that were being delivered at the hospital, and in the clinics that were owned there. So the difference is lots of things were done manually back then. I was telling a story at a meeting earlier this week when I had the wonderful opportunity to actually write the kind of insurance documents that got filed with the state of Pennsylvania. And I'm old enough to remember having 5 pieces of carbon paper in between, you know, typewriter sheets so that you didn't have to type 32 pages 5 times. And actually was the first network administrator at that particular organization and got to decide who got the first 5 computers and which drives they could look at. So I think technology has definitely changed, you know, how we work, you know, in the tasks that we do probably have changed. But the ultimate outcome of how do we bring value and improve health of the communities that we serve, I think, has remained the same throughout. So a fascinating journey, lots of technical differences, but I think the mission and why we show up every day is still the same, or at least for me, it is.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the way to get there. It's probably changed a lot. I think the North Star still stayed the same, but of course, there's a lot of challenges now that we, with the labor shortages, with the rising costs. I'm sure in the past, there's the cost is always an issue. I think no matter what business you are, cost is always a right. challenge. But what are the things that the problem or the challenge that you saw when you started? And it's what are the challenges that you see now are stay the same? It's just different color.
So, you know, I entered healthcare when, quote unquote, managed care was just starting. So the Clinton administration at that point in time was talking about how healthcare costs were rampant and we were going to use these managed care concepts in order to kind of control the rising, right, cost of healthcare. And I can tell you we've been doing that for the 30 years since. So, but unique challenges in different areas, right? I think when I first started, lots of challenges kind of on the inpatient cost side. And then over time, you know, brand name drugs kind of drove the cost for a while. And then we went to kind of imaging was a huge area for kind of cost drivers. And now we're in the specialty, right? And some of the biologic drugs. So I think this idea of, you know, cost increasing has been the same. It's been in different areas. But you know, something that I think we've battled along the way. I also think the promise and the challenges of data are, it's actually more difficult now, I believe, than it was when I first started. Lots of things were done by paper. And again, it's scary enough to say that I was in facilities where people were still, some of the clinicians I work with were still handwriting, right, their claims and bringing them in a box and dropping them off when I first started to pay. And we don't do that anymore. I think the challenges now are we have access to more data, but I don't necessarily know that that equates to access to actionable information. And we're going to need to continue to think through, you know, what are the standards necessary in order to ensure that we're getting the value out of the data and the investment that we're making in collection of data and, you know, work around those standards, I think will help drive us further faster. And so I really hope that over the remainder of my career, Christine, that we spend some time, you know, in our country, really getting crisp around what data, how is it collected, how is it defined, and those kind of things, so that we can use it effectively in improving the care for the communities that we serve.
Yeah, and I think the data sharing too is also good to have more collaboration, but everything in life, you cannot be 100% good. There's always unintended consequences. But I want to go back to what you were stating earlier about in the past, the imaging and then the very expensive drugs, and now you're saying it's the specialty. Can you maybe share a little bit insight about how that problem, that cost, the rising cost, like say imaging, that was solved? And now with the specialty care, how do you think that need to happen in order to address that challenges that we face right now through the specialty care?
Yeah, I think that, you know, some of it is perceived, right, and maybe projected, and then other parts are real, right? And so I remember when Prozac first came out, and at that point in time, and again, I don't remember exact, but there may have been 6 or 8 classes of drugs way back then, and our average per member per month spend on pharmaceuticals was like 50 cents, right? And we had $2 copays on drugs because what was available were really, really inexpensive antibiotics and, you know, some of the, you know, cardiovascular old medications. And I can remember the CEO of the health plan I was at saying, all of this Prozac stuff is going to bankrupt the country, right? Because it was like $67 and everything else was like, you know,
50 cents,
right? Like it costs next to nothing. And so, and again, I think we developed competencies around the management of that, you know, appropriate utilization, you know, defining which patient populations would use it. Same thing, right, with imaging, right? Just because you can image everything, is that what you should do? Where does it work? I think on the specialty med side, we're going to have the same thing. And in some of the, you know, the more expensive biologics, the same thing. Who are the right patients to, right, provide those therapies to? I think the challenge that we have is some of the therapies that are more curative or preventive in nature are often paid for by a single payer at a single moment in time, but then benefit somebody over a long period of time. And we may need to think about kind of national coverage parameters or reinsurance pools, right? Where these, you know, $500,000 to $2 to $3 million therapies, everybody pays into a pool that helps pay out for those who use those. Because I think if not, we'll stifle, you know, some of the creativity, because, you know, a single insurer at a single point in time is not going to want to pay for, you know, a therapy that cures an infant that then accrues to the 25 other payers that infant, right? So I think we'll have to get back to some kind of thought about reinsurance, maybe at a broader level. And that might be a place where some national intervention might be useful.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Rudnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that help life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownrudnick.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Canon Quality Group. Canon Quality Group has been helping med tech startups set up quality management systems for over 10 years. If you're unsure when to get started with quality management in your startup, turn to the experts at canonqualitygroup.com.
It's interesting because I think there's not that many insurance company, and they tend to move from one place to another.
Right.
Among the biggest one.
Right.
But maybe, you know, before we dive in more a bit on the specialty care, can you explain a little bit to us, like, what is the specialty care? What is included in the specialty care?
Well, I mean, I was speaking specifically to specialty pharmacy. I mean, I think in specialty care, right, it would be anything that would be delivered that would be outside of kind of your basic primary care provider. So, you know, things like cardiology or gastroenterology or rheumatology, you know, so some of the more specialized areas. In the specialty pharmacy side, most of the drugs that are included in that side are, you know, either, you know, genetically altered, you know, genes or some kind of biologic or infusion type medicine that, you know, in some cases are curative of, you know, diseases that, you know, individuals could suffer or even die from, right? And my favorite, and it, you know, again, it didn't play out the way everybody was talking about it, but there was a group of drugs several years ago released to treat hepatitis C, right? And they were in the 50 to 100,000 plus, you know, per you know, course. And everybody was walking around talking about how that was going to bankrupt the entire healthcare system. And of course it did it, because then, you know, people came forward with, these are the appropriate people to be treated. Here's how you need to do it. And then we get better at delivering it. I think we're going to have to do the same thing with, right, some of these really, really high cost biologics or even gene kind of therapy opportunities.
So I want to mention, I know you're part of the Providence Health, when a lot of people talk about the value-based care, but oftentimes it's the payers are focusing on the value-based care, but many of the providers are the fee-for-service. And what you're talking about earlier with the specialty care as a health system is the more specialty care procedure to happen, that drives also the revenue of the health system. How do you sync those two?
Well, many of the payers that Providence works with pay us on a value-based care basis, right? Mm-hmm. So we're paid, or we have targets that are the same dollar amount, whether we provide a little bit of specialty care or a lot of specialty care. And so, you know, in many of our arrangements, the goal is to provide the right care to the right patient in the right place at the right time to provide the best outcome, right? And I think those value-based models that are partnered with different payers by provider organizations begin to change the incentive to not more is better, but better is better. And what does better look like for Ruth and Christine or whoever we're looking at? So while we do get paid on a fee-for-service basis, we do have constructs around many of the patients that we serve that review, you know, the cost of the care that we're delivering, you know, at a per person or a population basis. So the incentives are there to do the right thing to the right person at the right time.
Yeah. I also think that, I mean, since the pandemic, everybody's, I don't know, like you're saying earlier, I think everybody's always worried about something's going to bankrupt our country, but yet here we are still, right? and I was thinking like, well, I've been in healthcare for a long time. Everybody talk about, oh my God, this is broken. It still is broken. But at the same time, I think after the pandemic, we hear a lot about a lot of the health systems are facing a lot of challenges. And there's a talk about there's a lot more payers now trying to merge or acquire a lot of the provider side. So how do you view that as a health system? Somebody is calling it like Kaiserification.
Yeah. Well, again, this is Ruth's perspective.
Yeah.
I believe that integrated healthcare is the best healthcare for the communities that we serve and the patients that we treat, right? So having the ability to coordinate around an individual, the care that's provided to them, as well as the data that flows with them so that we can continue to improve their outcomes, is the best way to provide care in the country. And I've worked in integrated delivery systems, like I said, from very, very early on, right? So I do believe that there's value and benefit in organizations like Providence that have a health plan and have clinics and you know, emergency rooms and hospitals and all of those kind of things. I think the difference between organizations like Kaiser and Providence and Optum is any value that we derive from an operating income standpoint, any dollars that we make, quote unquote, as a business, and healthcare is a business, are reinvested in the communities that we serve. Mm-hmm. In, you know, Optum and Optum-like entities, the dollars that are earned through doing healthcare business are either provided to shareholders or, you know, paid to the people who own those entities, right? And so I think I've always been driven to the nonprofit side of healthcare because I do believe that healthcare is a community asset and our investment in making our communities healthier makes our economy better, makes us, you know, more competitive from a local, state, and federal level. And now in a global economy, right, the health of our population will drive our overall, you know, continued economic success and ability to compete on the international stage. So I just come at it from the standpoint that dollars made in healthcare, of which the majority are paid for by the federal government, right? Most healthcare dollars come from Medicare or Medicaid. You know, value derived from those payments, I believe, return the most when they're invested back in the communities. But again, that's why I've stayed on the nonprofit healthcare side, Christine, for 30 plus years.
Yeah. So I also want to touch on a bit your role at the AN Health Solution. How is that sit as part of the larger organization?
So AN's a wholly owned subsidiary of the Providence system. And our role and goal really is to help facilitate, right, the continued transition to value-based care for our Providence organization. So some of the programs that we provide at Providence, as well as then extending those capabilities to other provider organizations or entities that want to do value-based payment, both here on the West Coast and across the country. So it's really taking the learnings that we have as a large integrated delivery system our experience in data integration and kind of operations from an administrative standpoint in the value-based space, and extending that to other organizations across, you know, across our country.
Is it almost like a consulting firm for other leveraging what you know? Based on your experience at Providence?
Part of it's that, but we have actually platform technology that helps support administrative operations for value-based payment, as well as service offerings like call center and claims payment and those kind of things in addition to that. So we help support kind of the what direction are you going in, and then technology platform to support data integrations, workflows, and those kind of things. And then finally, some of the support staff and provision of services that folks need to do as they're moving along across the, you know, the different land levels of value. So a little bit of consulting, but much more platform and service offerings.
Is it almost like you're offering services in a way that you guys are also offering Providence, and then you have the opportunity to share that services and share that cost?
That's absolutely correct, right? And so our ability, as an example, to answer customer service calls for particular health plan and health plan-like entities across multiple organizations, we're able to leverage the infrastructure across a larger number of people, which then makes the unit cost of each thing a little bit less expensive.
How common do you see this kind of subsidiary, like in other organizations, health system that offer this services and make it as a business subsidiary?
Yeah. And I think, Christine, over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, I think more and more healthcare organizations are looking for opportunities to extend capabilities that they've developed beyond, you know, the walls of their particular health system. You know, an example is Truvada. And, you know, Providence really led the creation of Truvada with several other provider organizations to bring together healthcare data to use in assisting, you know, continued development and improvement in healthcare solutions, including, you know, pharmaceutical and other areas. And so, I do think healthcare systems are looking for ways to diversify and extend their capabilities, you know, beyond the direct delivery of healthcare. Providence is probably a little a bleeding edge in that space, and actually has a number of other opportunities that will be introduced later this year and next year in kind of this extension of capabilities.
Well, you've been in the healthcare industry for a while, and there had always been new challenges. But what do you think the most pressing challenges in the healthcare that we need to think about right now?
Yeah, well, let's start with the, you know, the narrative that's been the same. And, you know, I do think continued focus on the need for health insurance coverage for individuals who are in the United States. Everybody, I believe, has the right to having access to coverage as well as access to care. So that's a narrative that many people have talked about for years, and we're getting closer now more than ever. And I think we all need to continue to push for that. You know, I do think the first do no harm concept we really need to think about, particularly as technology continues to advance. You know, there's huge promise with AI and machine learning and these long, large language opportunities from a data and a technology standpoint. There's also the inadvertent impact of some of those things. And so I think we just need to make sure that we understand what we're doing and the impact that it has. We don't want to carry forward, inequities, some of the disparity challenges by using data that was flawed to begin with. And so I worry, Christine, that, we're so fast on, trying to move to what is that we're not, always checking the box on what are the unintended consequences. So I'm hoping that really smart people will continue to ask those questions.
Well, thank you for being on our podcast. But actually, one more question. We definitely, based on your comment, we definitely need to think about unintended consequences, especially it often brings inequity in healthcare.
Yeah, I think, having some standards in place to begin with, even in some of the CMS selection models, now that people are doing some retrospective look back, the opting in of certain programs, perhaps like CKD and other things that CMS has put forward, disproportionately negatively impacted the inclusion of, subsets of the population from a race and ethnicity standpoint. We need to make sure that we understand the limitations of the data going in and do whatever we need to do as an industry to ensure that we're addressing those limitations. So I know there's a lot of really smart people asking really hard questions, and I hope they continue to do that. Thank you, Christine. Thanks for having me, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Technology Podcast. We want to thank our executive producer, Herminio Neto, and our podcast engineer, Andrew Rojek. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. The Health Technology Podcast is available on all major platforms.